Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 27th day of July, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. I'm going to start off today with another one of those stories that's not only a sign of the times, a harbinger, if you will, but also an indicator of what's happening that people just simply aren't paying attention to. Yeah, this one is a lot bigger than it seems. This comes from Zero Hedges coverage, and it says that not satisfied to confine their green meddling to gas stoves and gas generators. In other words, folks, LP and natural gas are some of the cleanest fuels on planet Earth, but the fact that they're very abundant in the United States and also relatively, therefore, inexpensive is the real reason the regime wants them gone. The central planners in the Biden regime, White House, now want to raise the price of water heaters by imposing new technology requirements on manufacturers. In other words, folks, yet again, they're going to gang rape the Constitution. The very concept of free enterprise and the ability of consumers and producers to deal with one another without meddling by Big Brother. And as the founders once knew, and Adam Smith pointed out, provide better products at lower prices. Well, the point is to provide no products at prices you can't afford. On Friday, the unconstitutional, their term, but it's correct, Department of Energy, and it's actually just the opposite, it's the Department of the Destruction of Energy nowadays, proposed new so-called energy efficiency standards that would in fact require electric water heaters this time. Remember, you're not going to be allowed to have natural gas ones when they get their way, to come equipped with heat pump technology, and gas heaters would be required to use condensing technology. These standards, they say, would take place in 2020. But guess what, folks? Since the standards are already out there and being mandated, that means that manufacturers will have to start dealing with it, and that means shutting things down essentially immediately. Noting that water heaters and heating accounts for about 13% of U.S. residential energy costs, the Energy Department claimed these new dictates would save consumers over $11 billion annually on their energy and water bills. What a crock. While reducing carbon dioxide emissions, booga, 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 which don't matter for squat if you actually understand real science, by some 500 million metric tons over the next 30 years, which is several lifetimes the way they've got it worked out. Today's actions, and I'm quoting, together with our industry partners and stakeholders, how's that for a communist buzzword you're intended to get used to by now, improve outdated, but of course unconstitutional, efficiency standards. If we had a free economy, there would be no such thing, mandated by Big Brother, for common household appliances, which pretty soon won't be all that common, which is essential to slashing energy bills. You know what will also do it? Slashing the numbers of American consumers by making sure they can't afford any energy, much less appliances that use it, and cutting harmful bullshit carbon emissions, said Energy Secretary, foreign-born Jennifer Granholm. Quote, this proposal, Achtung, reinforces the trajectory of consumer savings that form the key pillar of Bidenomics, a.k.a. a command economy where we command the peons to live in poverty, if they live at all. The counterpoint comes from Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky, who just happens to have two engineering degrees, notes Zero Hedge, and has also removed his Kentucky ranch entirely from the power grid. I guess he can see things that some of us here have been talking about for quite a while. And he regularly shares his clever innovations online. And here, folks, he nails it. And this is the point of spending so much time on the article, both the engineering and the free market economics. Quote, these products, said Massey, already exist in the free market. Consumers can and should decide whether the upfront cost of a heat pump water heater is worth the possible long-term savings. And he notes, in many cases, the monthly savings never make up for the upfront cost of the equipment. Why is that particularly important? Well, in warmer weather or climates, heat pump water heaters might save energy, but they make less sense in northern climates because they have to extract heat from the surrounding air, warm air that your furnace will have to work harder to replace. So there's no free lunch when it comes to these water heaters in the winter. Some water heater manufacturers, like giant Rheem, immediately moved to endorse the new socialist regulations because that giant company stands to benefit from new regulations that would force smaller, weaker competitors to spend lots of money they can't afford on R&D to meet the green BS standards, or better still, just go out of business. And that would lead to, well, exactly what Big Brother's public-private partners always want, government-sanctioned monopolies. And that would enable them to do what monopolies always do, which is, well, you know it, unless you work for the regime. One of the competitors, tankless water heater maker Rinnai, has called the new standards, quote, technologically impossible, and warned, correctly, your host would add, that they lead to a narrower range of choices, maybe very narrow, for consumers. And the regime did confirm the latest unconstitutional, tyrannical idiocy. A reporter asked Karine Jean-Pierre just how many more home appliances that Americans will have to get rid of, replace, or never be able to use anymore because of new regulations, saying, quote, so far from this administration, sick, we've seen them go after gas stoves, air conditioning units, and regulate refrigerators, washing machines, dishwashers, now water heaters. Just how many more home appliances will Americans eventually have to replace because of these regulations, to which KGP replied, don't worry, they won't take effect until 2029. But the hammering, of course, has already started. They are, of course, destroying rights and freedoms on every front, including an old one that we're almost getting used to, but they're getting sneakier about it. This comes from Zero Hedge via the Gun Owners of America, who notes that the Senate socialists, masquerading as Democrats, are now attempting to sneak an authorization of another outdated gun control law that, of course, is counterproductive to the extreme, into the must-pass NDAA. How many times have we seen this of late? The National Defense Authorization Act, a.k.a. the U.S. military budget. This time it's the 1988 abomination called the Undetectable Firearms Act. I'm going to contend that the details are less important than the object. Ultimately, we know what that is, complete gun prohibition amongst the peons so that Big Brother can do whatever they want with them. But it's also, as Thomas Jefferson and the founders warned, to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. Typically, that's involved using things like the Commerce Clause and the idea that you peons, if you engage in commerce and you use almighty fiat bucks, which are an abomination to the Creator anyway, and the Constitution, well, that means you've entered into our realm. You're subject to our jurisdiction. We can do whatever we want with you. Well, not only in French, we'll get you to waive your rights to own something before we even allow you to pretend you're purchasing it. With that insidious yellow slave form you've probably seen. Which takes us straight here. What about those who don't? Who know better? Answer. Well, that's what abominations like this are for. We have to come up with some other way of roping them in. Anybody still remember when guns were private property? You could buy them, sell them, even give them to your son. But not if you're a slave and they're serial numbered and registered. But still, there are other ways of avoiding the trap. Big Brother calls them loopholes. We called them freedoms back when we had them. Because maybe they build these things for themselves, don't even engage in commerce. Well, what then? Aha! We come up with some justification. And as GOA notes, the act itself not only hinders innovation in the firearms industry, which is, of course, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, because they take the mark, but the potential for the weaponization of this law, and that's the intent, folks, is huge. Similar to how we've seen the 1934 National Firearms Act weaponized to attack first things that the military or militia would obviously have, sound suppressors, full auto weapons, and so on, in other words, weapons of war, they've turned that on their head, and more lately, to attack pistol braces, bump stocks, and the ATF's illegal gun registration. Typically, says the story, these substitute amendments, like the one they're using here, are used for fixing grammar or spell checking. But it's also a way to try to get a law into the final bill and the text without actually having people be aware of it, much less voting on it. This is not only how sausage is made, it's how evil advances, quietly, stealthily, and with the same clear intent. Here's another example of almost the same insidious process, a different mechanism, but the same goal. This piece comes from Zero Hedge 2. Submitted by Goldfix and authored by Michael Lynch, it's entitled, Why Was the U.S. Treasury's Silver Eagle Mandate Not Honored? Well, we know the answer, because the law is for peons, not for three-letter government agencies that don't bother with the Constitution to begin with. In this case, though, remarkably, the U.S. Mint actually is in there, Article 1, Section 8, under the authority of Congress. The piece begins by quoting the U.S. Liberty Coin Act, which says, Notwithstanding any other provision of law, the Secretary, meaning the Secretary of the Mint, shall mint and issue in quantities and qualities that the Secretary determines are sufficient to meet public demand. Well, what? Among other things, American Silver Eagles, or ASCs, a 1 troy ounce silver coin produced by the U.S. Mint, and it's the primary bullion investment for many small investors in America. And the piece begins by noting that ASC investment is substantial. There have been over 619 million such coins bought since the project began, valued at over 15 billion bucks, and they happen to contain 17 times more silver than all the registered silver backing, which maybe not saying that much, that constitutes the entirety of the CRIMEX, a.k.a. COMEX, silver trading market. Okay, well, folks, we know it's the paper silver trading market. The U.S. Mint says the story is bound by that Liberty Coin Act, Statute 99-61, to meet market demand of these ASC coins, and until recently, you can guess about when that might have happened. Yeah, if you're going to steal elections, why not screw the rest of the law, too? The Mint dutifully complied with the law regarding production volumes. Over nearly four decades, the Mint managed to overcome significant challenges by increasing production over 450% between 2007 and 2016, and substantially increasing production even during the COVID-1984-induced supply chain disruption in 2020. But in February 2021, a grassroots movement called Silver Squeeze commenced on socialist media, with the group investing in a multitude of silver products, including the Silver Eagle coins. With the result that increased demand for the coin drove market premiums as high as 30%, which is incredible, folks, far above typical silver or gold coin premiums. Over the following 8 months through September 21, there was minimal production increase from the Mint, despite the continued coin premium pressure. On September 24th of that same year, 2021, the director of the Mint, David J. Ryder, resigned. And his replacement, you can guess, can't you? An appointee of the Fourth Reich, Ventris Gibson, who immediately cut Mint coin production by about 50%, from an average of 2.6 million coins monthly to just half that, 1.3 million, which caused coin premiums to soar even more, to as high as 75%, more than six times the typical market rate. Well, the rest of the story, as you would say, is history here. The Mint's coin production over the 21 months since the Biden plant is the lowest since 2018, and only a small fraction, just over a third, of the Mint's prior production back in 2015. And the restricted production has occurred even though coin premiums have been at record highs for 3.5 years. Kind of begs the question, right? Why, oh why, would the Mint want to discourage people being able to buy silver coins? I guess you can guess, right? The Mint, though, is in violation of the law by restricting production below demand. And as a result, investors have wasted or paid about a third of $1 billion more in excess costs to try to buy production from the Mint. And that's money they won't have otherwise to buy silver. More importantly, small investor demand, and I think this is the real point, right, is not being met. Analysts estimate that investor demand is about 270 million ounces greater than supply. So small investors have been deprived of about $7 billion of American Silver Eagle coins. And yeah, if you think about it, that certainly helps Big Brother and those that are public-private partners to keep the silver market from completely imploding before its time, right? They ask the question, I think it's already been asked and answered, why would the Mint's production of Silver Eagles be at a five-year low during a period when coin premiums have been at their highest ever? Answer, we're talking about a premium over paper, or in this case, vapor. Says the author, it's a simple question, and it's time to ask Ventris Gibson and, of course, Janet Yellen that question under oath, as if, folks, being under oath is going to prevent them from doing what, you know, blankety-blanking well, they're gonna. From there, we're going to go to a bit more economics that ultimately makes a very similar point. This one, too, comes from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, and it's about commercial real estate, or CRE markets, and nobody understands where the bottom is the headline. Starwood Capital Group's Barry Sternlicht recently told Bloomberg's David Rubenstein about the ongoing crisis in the CRE, or commercial real estate sector, equating it to a Category 5 hurricane, and he cautioned, it's sort of a blackout hovering over the entire industry until we get some relief. For some understanding of what the Fed's going to do over the longer term. The biggest problem currently in the CRE space is sliding office and retail demand. I hope you're sitting down, folks. In downtown, read this as socialist, very politically correct cities. And you couple that with high interest rates, there's a disaster lurking for building owners. According to Morgan Stanley, the elephant in the room is a massive debt maturity wall of CRE loans that totals $500 billion in 2024 and over $2.5 trillion over the next 5 years. And here's the key quote from the piece in response to a question about why the rise in interest rates is so dangerous to the CRE sector. When you talk about these large structures, says the respondent, John Fish, especially in New York City, you got all these buildings out there, almost 100 million square feet of vacant office spaces. It's staggering. And you say to yourself, well, right now, we're in a situation where those buildings are about 45, 55, 65% maybe occupied, depending upon where they are. And all of a sudden, the cost of capital to support those buildings has almost doubled. So you've got a double whammy. You've got occupancy down. Thank you, COVID-1984 pandemic and Cyclone B. And he didn't say that, your host did. But again, it's part of the reason why nobody that's been paying attention wants to be in places like downtown New York City. So the value is down and there's less income coming in. And the cost of capital has gone up exponentially. So you've got a situation where timing has really impacted the development industry substantially. And the other problem is that the capital markets nationally have frozen because it seems nobody understands value. We can't evaluate price discovery, he says, because very few assets have traded during this period of time. And hey, guess what? You know the reason why. So as a result, he says, and this is key, nobody understands where the bottom is. And let me kind of cut to the chase here and suggest, you know what? If everybody knows, everybody with a brain, that is, that you don't want to be in the major cesspool cities given what's coming, guess what that means if you're stuck with a great big expensive office building and a huge loan that you already can't pay and the interest rates are going up to boot? This next item, folks, is a story from one of my favorites, Chris Martin, who's probably one of the best cycles and economic analysts out there with an Austrian bent to boot. It comes via the Burning platform, and it's called The CBDC Crisis of 2025. And undoubtedly, begins Martin Armstrong, this entire scheme of digital currencies will be the death of Western civilization. I guess he cuts right to the chase, too. The founding fathers prohibited direct taxation, which was repealed during the Marxist movement towards creating the income tax. We're talking 1913, if you recall. Once the income tax was imposed and Big Brother put in place the enforcement arm, the Federal Reserve, the government then needed to know everything you did, which is why the founding fathers prohibited any form of direct taxation. Now, even a journalist, if he fails to comply with the demands of Big Brother, is targeted by the IRS. This allows them to go after anyone, unless you're the son of a senile president, who in fact does as he's told in order to keep being the son of a senile president. So yes, says Martin Armstrong, this will be the worst currency crisis in human history, and it will be the final nail in the coffin of freedom. So again, Martin Armstrong is coming right out and saying it. He includes an article from decades ago about how repudiation of the Czechoslovakian currency stunned the Czech populace in the Soviet-dominated state. The Prague government, it said, announced Saturday sweeping monetary reforms and abandoned its old currency system, establishing a new Czech crown based on the Russian ruble. And it declared all state loans and securities issued since 1945 at the time to be worthless. Back to the piece. This will most likely, says Martin Armstrong, cancel all currencies after the 2024 U.S. election, or whatever they call it. It'll need to be coordinated, he said, and don't worry, they've been planning on it for a long time, to prevent capital flight. Whatever's in bank accounts or brokerage accounts will be re-denominated in the new digital currency. And the IMF, as you might guess, is pushing hard to replace the dollar with its own version. The likelihood of the collapse of the IMF and world institutions will probably arrive, suggests Martin Armstrong, and his computer models, in 2031. Big tech will, of course, comply. They know where their bread is buttered. They're already stripping us of our freedom of speech. This will become imperative to oppress all freedom in the hopes that they can establish this new totalitarian state, which is the dream of Klaus Schwab and his band of merry thieves at the World Economic Forum. So you can expect the internet, and it's already being done, to be highly monitored and restricted. The point of investments post-2024 will be to hold on, suggests Armstrong, to tangible assets, things that are real, because those, he says, will make this transition from one currency to the next. And as far as bail-ins being applied to people's brokerage accounts, yep, the answer is yes. That was already done by Judge Martin Glenn, who presided over MF Global's bankruptcy and created the first bail-in without congressional authority. He was the first one, the piece notes, to engage in forced loans by abandoning the rule of law to help the banksters and protect Corzini from losses by taking client accounts to cover MF Global's losses. This, says Armstrong, is no different from what we saw in Cyprus. Remember the bail-ins there years ago. He simply allowed the confiscation of client funds when, in fact, the rule of law should have been that the banksters were responsible and MF Global's losses, and it should have been reversed. Never should the client's funds be taken for MF Global's losses to the New York banksters. And he didn't spell it right, but he's trying to be as polite as possible, I suspect. Anyway, says Armstrong, you will have no opt-out avenue. That is the intent, folks. Taxes and commerce will all be digital, which is why they're pushing 5G in order to create instant transfers and enable them to replace any and all cash transactions. Armstrong won't say it because he has a slightly different bailiwick. I will. You know what it is. It's the mark of the beast. Regarding inheritance, the left is already set to push behind the curtain that upon death, everything should belong to the state, which is, of course, one of the Communist Manifesto planks. I fear this will only unleash civil war, says Martin. Nevertheless, there's a crazy leftist in Australia proposing exactly that. It's unfair for one person to have large wealth and another nothing. Consider, he says, therefore, putting all your assets and accounts in one's children's names now to avoid this possible scenario, at least as far as it can be avoided, because otherwise it carries tremendous risk. It all depends, he notes, on your country. When I bought a house 30 years ago, I simply added my children's names. Today you can't do that, and it becomes taxable to them. So while we can't rule out, he says, tactical nuclear weapons, the risk of an EMP attack, too, will be devastating. That would wipe out the economy and take down the Internet. Your host would note, so would a cyber attack that accomplishes the same thing. And it looks almost inevitable to me, folks, that eventually they're going to want to bring down the power grid, at least so far as the peons are concerned. The prospect, says Armstrong, of whatever you have in an account, well, it could simply vanish. And that's one primary reason, he says, I'm against the whole crypto CBDC or central bank digital currency agenda. Because in times of war, an EMP could devastate an adversary. And I think, he says, this simply warns that you should have, and this is not news either, but your host has been talking about it for as long as I've been doing radio, some old silver coins. In the U.S., those would be the kind that predate the evil year 1965. Let's close today with another one of those quick stories that really tells us just exactly what George Carlin used to point out. There's a big club, and you ain't in it. But ironically, crackhead whoring sons of an illegitimate senile fake president seem to be. While the DOJ continues to run cover for the Bidens, says another piece here from Zero Hedge, a new report from the Insider reveals yet another shady-looking transaction, to put it mildly, involving the so-called First Family. When Joe Biden promised on the campaign trail from his basement in 2020 that there'd be an absolute wall between his family's private business and his official duties, yeah, guess which side of it he's on, along with Big Brother, it appears that was yet another lie, because the identities of several buyers of Hunter Biden's so-called art have turned out to be friends. One buyer, whose identity is being hidden still, spent $875,000 on 11 different Hunter Biden artworks, while another one received a direct benefit from the Biden White Whorehouse. That buyer has been revealed as Elizabeth Hirsch Naftali, an L.A. real estate investor and so-called philanthropist who's been extremely influential in California socialists Democrat circles, and has given extensively to the Biden regime, the DNC, and so forth. She even hosted a fundraiser headlined by the Heels in the Air Vice President. There's a lot more detail in here, and of course a whole lot more that you're not going to be allowed to hear, but guess what, folks? Again, there's a club, you ain't in it, and the key here is to understand that it's going to get worse from here. The economic situation has been designed to implode. We're seeing the implosion happen. There are more and more dates certain that are out in the near future. Will it be all at once, or will it take a while to get there? Well, regardless, those that have eyes to see and have been paying attention already know where it's headed. You probably already even know what needs to be done. The question is, how much time do you have left, and how appropriate is it to start making all the moves that are necessary right now? Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.